take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
9:05, good Thursday morning to you. Hope you're all doing well out there. Not so fast to Andrew Pinson trying to sneak out this morning, trying to leave early, come in, do a morning show, think the day is done at 9 o'clock. No, we got a rope on him. We're pulling him back in. We're going to get Andrew to sit in on the panel this morning. This is a full-length work day for you today.
Calling security was a little bit too far, but yeah, I'm here for you.
I love that they're at my beck and call like that, whatever I need to make happen. You're trying to do the Bill Carroll shift there. But
Trying. I was doing my best. I think I woke up around 7 o'clock eventually.
Yeah, so. It's always tough the first morning, right? I mean, I know you do the weekends and whatnot, but it's always tough when you're trying to flip your sleep schedule.
Oh, I said 5 o'clock start. Like, even on the weekends, we don't do that. So it always it's always super early to get going.
The best part of my life, the very best slice of my life, was when I was freelancing for The Score. So like playoffs, we would be at games.
We would go
for ages after the game. They had all kinds of time to fill. It was great. We had wonderful access with the Senators, player after player. You'd be there late into the night, file your story. And then I was working mornings here.
Oh my gosh. You
maybe get that little cat nap in between and
maybe.
Hope maybe you can have an afternoon snooze and stuff. Yeah. But when you're young, you can do that, right?
I guess so.
Remember
but also,
those days?
Well, or radio also helps me in that aspect too, because I don't have to look very good when I come in for radio.
But you do.
I can hide it.
Shockingly,
yeah.
You do. And the hat covers all ill. Yeah, the wet hair ponytail was my signature back in the day.
Oh, my
nice
God.
And easy.
Especially during those playoff runs, right? I can't imagine what that would be like.
Yeah. That was. I mean, we had playoff runs, though. So
that was the really cool thing
on a Senators game day here where they're in Tufts. Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche in town tonight. So. If there's any chance the Sens turn it back around and make it exciting down the stretch again, they are going to have to do it against some very good teams, as we have talked about in the past. It is not a bad Thursday out there. It feels a little warmer than it did yesterday when we had that crazy wind happening, and it's going to warm up nicely into next week with some temperatures finally significantly above zero as that gradual warm-up continues in these last few days of winter. We are almost there. Spring. Next week, hang in, and you get to end the week with St. Paddy's Day tomorrow. So all is good for the most part. 9:07 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Let's get to our big five.
Big news.
Even bigger news.
Yeah. This morning, was it a civilized time?
Well, yes, I have to admit. So most days when I do early radio, I'm usually in my pajamas, but I am ready to leave for the office as soon as we're finished. So
there you go.
But I still bet I got way more sleep than the two of you did.
It's the beauty of radio, right? Is that you can wear your pajamas.
My sleep was okay. I am in the pajama-like clothing today, like kind of the loosey-goosey workout wear. Very comfortable. No ball cap, though. I maybe should have gone ball cap.
Say, it never ends for me whenever we're in radio. I'm always in the quote-unquote gym attire.
No, I haven't seen you in a three-piece suit all that often, Andrew, I got to say.
Actually, I will add to that. The last time I did wear, you know, something half presentable. I wore a blazer when I was doing election coverage. Even the security guard was like, hey, you look good today.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they didn't recognize you.
That was exactly it.
Once again, call security. So, yeah. Who's this guy coming in?
More problems than anything.
Good to dress up for Charles's visit to the market as well. He likes to comment on the appearance of our co-workers. So the next time he swings through here. All right. This guy always looks good. A couple of weeks after adding the word rapporteur to our vocabulary, we now know who the new independent special rapporteur will be. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau naming former Governor General David Johnston as the guy who will be looking into foreign interference. And Andrew was talking about it earlier, the government coming out and saying, you know, we hope we're going to avoid the accusations of partisanship. David Johnston having been appointed by Stephen Harper back in the day. What are our thoughts on this? How effective is this going to be? Let's hear from Marco Mendicino, the public safety minister, on this announcement yesterday.
We're very grateful that Mr. Johnston has agreed to take on this role. I think he will appreciate the magnitude of the issue, the complexities around it, the fact that these are pressing and important issues that Canadians would like answers to and advice on. And as we've said, as a government, whatever recommendations Mr. Johnston puts forward in his capacity as special rapporteur, we will respect. But I have every confidence that he will thrust himself into this role in the same way that he has in every other office that he has served on behalf of his country.
Lisa Kirby, what are your thoughts on this appointment?
Well, you know, when I first heard that they had appointed the former GG, who had been appointed by Harper and reappointed, he had his term extended as the Governor General, I thought, well, this is great. You know, it's not going to be a lot of conservative, you know, yipping about this stuff, because how could there be? This is a Harper appointee. Harper is a very revered figure within the Conservative Party of Canada. And yet what happens? Immediately you had very prominent Conservative members, including the Deputy House Leader, coming out and saying that this was a terrible choice. And it's not going to be unbiased because the former GG apparently sits on the Trudeau Foundation. Unfortunately, most people think that this is the Justin Trudeau Foundation. It isn't. It was put together by his father. But that doesn't disqualify the former Governor General, who by all accounts spent many years studying law, doing law, being a law specialist. And now he's coming in post-GG appointment. I'm just not sure if this is the right way we should be going, because one of the things we need to remember is that this isn't a Liberal issue anymore. This entire matter, we have a Conservative provincial member of provincial parliament who has since stepped down because there's been some allegations of interference in his election. So this is a very broad matter now. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the former GG comes back with, what recommendation he makes, what the government does. But I thought it was a very good appointment. Unfortunately, the Conservatives feel otherwise.
I mean, it is about our country. It's about preserving the integrity of a system that we hold dear. It would be lovely, Andrew, to think that maybe we could go about looking into this without some of the extreme partisanship you tended to see in the States on this. Mendocino was on with Vashi Capellos yesterday, said Johnston is someone who has unimpeachable credentials and character. What are you thinking of this choice, Andrew? And is it enough, a special rapporteur looking into this, will it be enough to satisfy Canadians that, you know, the government has done due diligence on this?
Well, we'll see if it's enough to satisfy Canadians. I don't know if it'll have an appetite to kind of satisfy the political opposition, which, of course, you know, can't ever really be satisfied on that front.
But this is true.
But a good choice there, in a sense of he's well-respected on both sides. He's been a governor general, Harper appointee, as you mentioned, but just a very respected individual on that aspect. They said they were going to find somebody unimpeachable. I think they did a good job here. But, you know, the question, it kind of brings him into this kind of sphere. And so I wonder his thoughts on this, because Mendocino was asked about this on CTV last night. You know, how willing was David Johnston to get involved in this process? And he would not answer that. So it sounds like, you know, not very. So it kind of brings him into this, you know, partisan mess. Hopefully Canadians will get the answer that they want to, despite some of the partisan bickering, because even, you know, looking at some of the polls, you know, 70 and 75% of Liberal and NDP voters also want some answers to this too. So if you can, you know, parse through the spin and get to the meat of the question, what you want, are our elections integral? Can we trust their integrity? Can we be confident in the results? I think we have the ability to get to the bottom of that here, but it's probably going to come with some political aspects to it too.
I wonder about that too. How do you feel when you get that call? I got a job for you. How would you like to do this over the next little bit?
No problem. God.
That sounds a little heavy, but thank goodness there are people that are willing to take some of that stuff on. All power to him. It'll be interesting to see how this all transpires. All right, weather. Let's look at tomorrow, Friday, 2 degrees. Not bad. On the plus side, periods of rain or snow. Probably not quite patio weather for even the most hardy of us tomorrow. But when we get there, and it is around the corner, lots of sunshine next week, how would you like to be able to stay out on the patio until 2 a.m.? Maybe not if you're getting up to do radio the next morning, but for an evening where things are going beautifully with a group of friends and you're enjoying your night and we get those temperatures, should there be the option to be out there? Last call, the same outside as it is inside. This was, again, one of those pandemic measures, try to make it a little bit easier for restaurant owners to bring in some cash. And now City Council looking at making it permanent. But if you happen to live right next to one of these patios or in the neighborhood. Do you like the idea that there are more people outside on the street? Do you think it'll be noisy? Does it concern you? Or are you just happy that you can order a drink after 11 p.m. on a patio? Andrew, how are you feeling about this one?
Well, I think it is a good time to kind of standardize everything. The only issue I would have, right, is like you say, like living in one of these neighborhoods, right? If you have an apartment or you have a home that's kind of in a neighborhood where there is a boisterous patio, you might have some concerns, but, you know, generally that's, you know, it's a bylaw issue already. So it's already something that, you know, people deal with, restaurant owners deal with.
If there's a lot of noise, they would have to crack down on it, just
exactly. The
same as a group of people standing on the street.
Whether or not they were drinking or not, right? And so I'm kind of for this in a sense of trying to give some money back to restaurant owners who are trying to make some money back. And also just to, you know, keep a summer night going, like you're saying. Why not?
Here's the thing.
Down?
Lisa, I don't know if I knew that it wasn't a thing before, because I don't know how often I've been on the patio going, oh, I really want to stay out later and keep drinking. But I don't know if this is targeting our demographic necessarily. But what do you think of the move?
I don't think I have been up at 2 a.m. in about 20 years. So I am most definitely not the demographic that they're seeking, but I am one of those people who live downtown fairly close to some outdoor establishments. I like having them in the neighborhood. I think they bring a lot to my neighborhood in particular. But, you know, I'm fairly certain that if I'm lying awake at 2 a.m. because I can hear the partying happening at the local patio right down the street, I'm probably not going to be terribly happy.
A little grumpy. I have someone texting saying 2 a.m. was the last call 30 years ago or more. LOL. I know I was there. I remember the 1 a.m. 3 a.m. split. That's the thing I remember. When you were done partying at 1 a.m., you went across the bridge to do the 3 a.m. thing in Gatineau. That's a signature of this area.
I was going to say, I think I only ever did that once. But yeah, that was the right. It's because the party still goes on across the bridge.
I only did it once a day back in the day. 9:17 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Let's talk a little bit more about partying and concerts and getting out and how much it costs you, and can no one do anything about it? Ticketmaster in trouble again. That's coming up here on The Big Five. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
Big news.
Even bigger news.
Yeah, great. Let's hear it.
Ottawa at Work. Big Five stories.
I don't care.
Not quite Friday yet, but that is The Cure. Remember them from way back. A lot of people still love these guys. Want to go see them in concert. Their tickets went on sale on Ticketmaster, this British band, and there has been a bit of a reaction from the band itself after they did. The band trying to keep the price of tickets low, making it accessible for fans. They had tickets that they were going to sell for as little as $20 each. But the price has more than doubled on Ticketmaster because of service fees, facility charges, etc. Prices went way up. Robert Smith of The Cure tweeting out, "I am as sickened as you all are by today's Ticketmaster fees debacle. To be very clear, the artist has no way to limit them. I have been asking how they are justified. If I get anything coherent by way of an answer, I will let you all know." It has been a tough year for Ticketmaster. Maybe not financially. They seem to be making some money, but they have been in hot water over access. People not being able to get online at the time they thought they could for some of the big name acts. There was a whole thing with Taylor Swift. We're still waiting for her to announce international dates, hoping there might be some Canadian dates in there. And some people suggesting part of the reason is they're trying to work things out with Ticketmaster. Fans have been criticizing the prices on there for quite a while, that it's just tough to go and see your favorite act. What are all these fees when you're purchasing online? Why are the fees the same price as the ticket? Is this a concern? I mean, they're trying to do what they can to do the verified sale so you don't have all these tickets going out into the resale market and trying to keep people coming to Ticketmaster. Bands are very, very big on this, a lot of them. And then you have these issues, Andrew. I mean, I don't know how often you're on there trying to get your concert tickets, but frustrating that a band wants their fans to get in there for a decent price, and they're not able to make that happen.
That's what's most frustrating for me, is even the bands, right? They're saying, hey, we want to give this to you for a cheaper price, and you have a subsidiary kind of stepping in the middle and saying, hey, yeah, not so fast. So it seems like, you know, the scalpers have gone, the old school kind of scalpers have gone, and it seems like Ticketmaster has just kind of picked up the mantle and said, hey, we're gonna take the middleman fee now. Because, you know, this happened during the kind of Springsteen tickets as well. A lot of people were upset because those tickets got out of control in the U.S. And that was kind of my thing here. I signed up for the pre-sale for Ottawa to get into the Springsteen tickets. I didn't make it in, but my brother did. And just, it's incredible how much the demand.
Your favorite brother? The one that's going to
the one who's definitely staying with me now, for sure, instead of paying for a hotel. But the idea that, you know, you have to pay so much just to see, you know, your favorite artist, it makes it out of touch for a lot of people. And not just by a little bit. We're talking, you know, in some cases, some of these tickets are $700 or $800 to get decent seats. I don't know how you kind of can, I guess, justify that to the consumer who just wants to see their band.
Lisa, only rich people at concerts? Is that the way of the future?
Well, it's ridiculous. You know, when I have purchased tickets through Ticketmaster, it's kind of like when I get my electrical bill and I realize I'm paying more money for the electricity to be delivered to my house than I am paying for the actual electricity. And I think that's a problem in terms of both, you know, let's be honest, both the electricity charges and for these tickets. You know, people save up their money to go see their favorite bands. You know, The Cure, I came to age in the 80s, so The Cure was a very important part of my life in the 80s, and I would love to go see them, but I refuse to pay these prices. So what I do now is when, you know, a band comes through that I really like, I just hope that they're playing a small venue and I can just purchase a ticket that way. And then you're paying $30-$40 to get in. Of course, I then dole out about $200 in merch. But the ticket is then affordable and people can go see their favorite shows. And that's what it's supposed to be like. You're right. It is completely frustrating, the fact that the band itself wanted to make their tickets accessible, and it was the ticket seller who made them inaccessible for the vast majority of people. And it's just, it's wrong. And there has to be some sort of regulator. You know, I don't know how they're able to get away with this unless it's like the Wild West out there.
And lovely to be able to see a band in a more intimate venue when that happens, and to support some local places that are showcasing the music, for sure. I have such mainstream musical taste that I'm typically at the CTC going to the concerts. I pay the big bucks because I love to see live music. And I'm also at the CTC a whole lot for the Sens. Would love to be watching this team at LeBreton Flats in the near future, maybe under a new owner. Are we getting close? This is what the NHL commissioner had to say yesterday.
You begin the process of winnowing down the number of interested parties, and while you're reducing the number of parties, you're hopefully increasing the magnitude of their interest for those that are remaining.
So maybe within weeks, Andrew, and as we're looking at this, we're dissecting it, trying to figure out what's going to happen, which group is going to be the favorite. Ryan Reynolds, part of a big sale, freed up some cash yesterday, which was interesting, although our little minds like us have no idea if that actually really means anything, but it gives us something to talk about.
We can definitely continue to speculate wildly about it. But no, I think this is kind of, we're honing down on kind of crunch time here in terms of we'll get an answer soon. But I very much think that they're the dark horse or the favorite in this race. Particularly, I think I was talking a little bit this morning, Remington Group is a developing company that has developed most of the city of Markham as well. So if we're talking about, you know, a new arena at LeBreton Flats, probably going to include some development as well. So, you know, I feel like this company, along with, you know, Ryan Reynolds being attached to it, I feel like they've just got all the pieces here. We'll wait to see what happens, but I think there is a lot of support for moving, you know, a downtown arena as well.
It's a bright light in what has been a tough winter for a lot of us. I'm going to skip right to this because we only have a minute left here. If you feel like you're pining for some sunshine in this province in recent months, it's because Ontario has just lived through one of the darkest winter seasons in nearly a century. Not much sunshine. What's going on? It's one thing. It's cold. It's mild. The canal's not freezing. But the lack of sun apparently was a thing this winter. Did we feel it? I think it was more in the Toronto area. I think we're still getting some of our good sunshine here in Ottawa. But I don't know. We got some gray days ahead. Sunshine back a little bit on Sunday. Next week looks really, really good. You ready for a big, bright, sunny week, Lisa?
I've been dying for a big, bright, sunny week. I've been in Ontario now for 23 years, and every single winter I contemplate how I'm going to get back to Vancouver. But I don't think that that's in the cards for me.
But not sunnier usually, is it? Are they sunnier than us?
That's true. But I was in the Okanagan for a long time, has probably the best climate in the country.
So good.
So I got spoiled. But I think this year in particular, plus it was so dark and we got so much snow. Like the only bright light was that it wasn't as cold as usual, except for one or two really, really bad days. But it was hard.
Yeah.
Okanagan sounds great right now. I don't know about you.
Okanagan is so good. Summer, winter.
Yeah.
Anytime.
I got to spend a summer working there. But I don't know. This winter felt worse than normal for me. I don't know why. If it was just the lack of sunshine, but boy, am I ever feeling it now that it's coming back, right? These sunny days.
Yeah.
It just, you feel it instantly. I'm glad to see the daylight coming back after 6 o'clock. It's all kind of very nice moving towards the first day of spring on Tuesday.
I do love Monday. The changing of the seasons, especially when they're changing in the right direction and it's not fall to winter, but winter to spring. Andrew, a ray of sunshine for us here. As always, thanks for sticking around for the panel this morning. Lisa Kirby, have a wonderful day. Appreciate you both. 9:30 on News Talk 580 CFRA. After the news, it is game day for the Ottawa Senators. Brady Tkachuk was working yesterday, too, making a wonderful announcement at the Boys and Girls Club. We're going to get into that and what it means for the kids there coming up in just a moment. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull. Drop a few blues and pop a few champagne bottles.
Throwing that money like you just won the lotto. Welcome back to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull. On News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
This is an exciting day that Emma and I have been planning and looking forward to for a long time. A commitment that was really important for us to make to the Ottawa community for everything they have done for us, and this is our home now. There are so many great people in this city doing important things and giving back that trying to find a way to contribute was overwhelming. But for us, one thing has always been important to us, are the kids and the young people.
That is the voice of Ottawa Senators captain Brady Tkachuk making this announcement yesterday of a new partnership with the Boys and Girls Club Ottawa, BGC Ottawa. It is a multi-year partnership. Brady and his fiancée Emma Farinacci both involved in this. You hear Brady talking about this being their home here in Ottawa. It's a multi-year partnership, I think, for fans of Brady's who love having him here in Ottawa. This sounds like a really, really good deal. But it's a really, really good deal and a really exciting project for BGC Ottawa and for the kids who are there. We had a couple of lovely, somewhat older kids representing the club on CTV Ottawa last night who just spoke very beautifully and excitedly about this program and what it will mean. Brady's captains, Tkachuk's captains, this program. We're going to get into more of what it does do for the kids there. Joined now by Adam Joyner, Chief Executive Officer of BGC Ottawa, who I'm sure is very excited about this. I mean, this is kind of the biggest name, biggest guy in town, and you guys have him, Adam.
Yeah, we're so excited, and we're thrilled to have Brady and Emma being part of BGC now, and our family here at the club. It's not just that, he's obviously the captain of the Ottawa Senators and, an amazing person, but he's just so perfect around our members in terms of just how he connects and how Emma connected with the kids just instantly and just want to be engaged and want to be part of the club. So it goes way past just a relationship around supporting the club from a fundraising perspective. It goes beyond that to a relationship with our members, which is very exciting.
I love the name of it, Tkachuk's Captains, giving everyone a chance to feel really important. Tell me how the program itself works. What will it do?
So Tkachuk's Captains is built and based on our values as an organization, belonging, respect, speaking out, engagement. Those are the values that really, speak, and leadership. And those are the values that really speak to Brady and who Brady is as a person, but also to what the club, the Boys and Girls Club, BGC Ottawa, tries to instill in every member that comes to our programs. So really the program is going to be built around those values and around the physical activity and healthy lifestyle pillar of programs. A lot of our programs are recreation physical activity programs. But really, under all of those is the intrinsic skill building that happens and the fundamentals that we teach. And Brady's program is going to highlight that and bring 28 youth to the forefront every year, seven from each of our four main locations, who are going to live and breathe those values and be one of Kachuk's captains.
So how do you recruit those people or determine who gets that sort of special honor? Is it based on kids that you are seeing in some of these recreation programs who need a little more help or who show they have a really awesome skill set and you want to help develop that?
It's such a great question. So, you know, the club's tagline is opportunity changes everything. And so what we try and do is provide opportunities to young people in our community. This program is going to highlight some of those youth that have instilled those values in what they do at the club. There's no charge to be a member of the club. Anybody's welcome. And it's completely free. The only charge is your character. So we're going to be looking for young people who are supporting each other, supporting the community, supporting the staff, supporting the buildings, and just being a good role model to each other and being a leader, just like Brady is to the Ottawa Senators in our community.
I've been to a clubhouse before, hung out on the basketball court and whatnot. Love the vibe there. Love the work that you do. But what do you mean when you say the only charge is your character?
So we don't, there's no charge to be a member of the club. We want our members, we wanted our relationship with our members to not be one of a fee. Our wonderful community does a ton to support our families. And it was really important that our programs were completely barrier free, meaning that we don't charge a fee for people to come. Our fee is the character that you bring into the space. So you have to be respectful of the staff. You have to be respectful of each other. You have to be respectful of the community that you live in. And those are the fee is really just being a solid person, a good role model, a future mentor to the young people that we're with. We work with children aged 6 to 18. So as our youth get older, they're actually becoming the mentors and role models. And actually over 80% of our staff are alumni of the club. So myself included. So, you know, it's really important that we instill the values in the next generation of youth leaders coming up at the organization.
So people who see the value of what this has meant in their lives and want to carry on, want to make sure that other kids have access to this. And you guys are in 19 neighborhoods in Ottawa?
We're in 19 neighborhoods and we have four main locations, which are huge, beautiful facilities with gyms and some have outdoor hockey rinks. Some have an indoor turf, some have a swimming pool in them. So there's a mix of different activities and services at each one. We offer over 40 programs a week in each of those big locations. We're also in smaller satellite locations. To really look at all of the programs and services, my suggestion would be to go to bgcottawa.org. And there you can see all of the different services that the club provides throughout the city. And there's also a landing page for the new Kachuk's Captains program. So you can take a look at that as well.
Kachuk and his fiance also made a private financial donation to the club, which is lovely, as well as putting their name on this and getting involved. What did you think when you first met this young man?
You know, you can meet someone very quickly and really see who they are sometimes. And both Brady and Emma came in with so much energy and passion to help. You know, when they first came in for the tour, the first question both asked is, how can I come when I want? Can I come more? Can I be involved more? And to me, that just rings true to everything I knew about Brady coming into the club for the first time. And it really rings true now. Just really genuine, authentic, wonderful people that want to help kids in our community. I couldn't be more grateful for this new partnership. Really because of the people they are. You know, we want to center our youth and children around good role models. And there's so many great things about Brady and Emma that our young people are just going to absolutely love as people.
We had a lovely announcement on CTV Ottawa last night. It was really good of you all to pause for a few seconds while we were getting to Leah LaRocque, who was covering it. But did you have a really nice moment yourself when you got to tell the kids that this was happening and that Brady Kachuk was going to be hanging out?
You know, I did. You know, I love my job. I go into every day and it's like my second home. It's the family for a lot. It was my family growing up. It's something I love to be at. It's something that makes me feel fulfilled every day. And it's the same for our families and our members. It's a safe and supportive place. So to be able to share this with our members, the excitement, their faces lighting up, knowing that, you know, somebody out there is just as caring as our staff are, that wants to be a part of their growth, you know, and really role model and mentor, you know, the next generation of young people so that they can be whatever they want. You know, that's the values we instill, but that's really what I, when I was giving this announcement, I was thinking in my head is, wow, this is going to be, you know, someone who's going to help a young person become whoever they want to be. And, you know, it's just such great feeling. And I actually got a little emotional at the end because it's really hard to see that impact right in front of you.
And every now and then you have that moment, I think, when you jump into the future and you can just imagine this child that might be helped by this program, who might be talking about this decades to come, coming back to the BCG, to the Boys and Girls Club, and being a part of it at the BGC, which is just an amazing thing. And I thought it was really, really cool. A great partnership. Congratulations on this. Brady Tkachuk, a guy that everyone says is the same off ice as he is on, where he is a heart and soul player. And then those moments with kids around the rink after, often giving away a stick or a puck, taking a moment to meet them. I can't imagine a cooler guy to be a part of your program. Adam, best of luck with it.
Thank you so much, Patricia. And just lastly, if anybody wants to check it out, we're at nhl.com/senators/community/Tkachuk's captains. There's a donate page there if anyone's interested in supporting this. And we're going to have 100 kids at the Sens game tonight. So it's a partnership we're really excited about and really looking forward to the future, the next 100 years of the club coming.
Oh, love it. Have a blast tonight. Thanks so much, Adam.
Thanks so much, Patricia. Have a great day.
Adam Joyner is Chief Executive Officer of BGC Ottawa. Yes, the Senators in action tonight, a 7 o'clock puck drop, taking on the Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche in tough. But Brady Tkachuk, always a whole lot of fun to watch out there on the ice and keep tabs on in his off-ice commitment to Ottawa, which is really, really a wonderful thing to see. This is the good stuff. 9:50 on News Talk 580 CFRA. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
Join the conversation on Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull. Text 580-580 right now.
9:55 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Question of the day today. Do you still go to concerts? Can you afford them? Who have you spent big money to see, or who would you? Lots of responses coming in on this. We're going to go through some of those after the 10 o'clock news here this morning. But whether you're going to concerts or not, if you have any money, if you happen to have a $20 bill in your pocket or in your wallet, pull it out. Who do you see? She's been on there a long time. Well, is it time for a change? There is a campaign afoot to get an Indigenous woman on Canada's $20 bill. Lynn Grew is here, CEO of the Native Women's Association of Canada. Lynn, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on the program this morning.
I'm so glad you could be here. So tell me about this Change the Bill campaign. Why was it started? What is it you want to see happen?
Well, this is a very exciting campaign for us. We're calling it a campaign to foster reconciliation through art. And what does that mean? Well, we would like to see recognition for Indigenous women on a $20 bill. We think it's a fantastic way of doing it. We called out to a number of artists who have sent in their artwork. And if you have a chance, you can get on our website, Change the Bill, and see this unbelievable, beautiful artwork. So we're proposing to put some Indigenous women that have done historical work in Canada and we think should be recognized on that $20 bill.
Do you have a list of names? Are you open to suggestions on this?
Well, the names have already been submitted and there's 12 women. So let me give you an example. Josephine Mandeman. Josephine Mandeman walked 17,000 kilometers around the Great Lakes to raise awareness about pollution in the rivers and waters in Canada and around the world. Margaret Pictou. She was in the Royal Canadian Air Force. She was a photographer, an aerial photographer, and just take her photos of bridges and roads by hanging upside down from the planes. And she was also the first female chief in Canada. Cindy Blackstock, she has 18 honorary doctorate degrees, the leading advocate for Indigenous children in this country. And I've got more examples, but these are just some of them. You can see them all on our website.
More than 20,000 people now have signed a petition to try to make this happen. Does this feel like one of those things where it's just about time that this should happen, that it's kind of a no-brainer?
Well, I think it is. And, you know, even they've done an initiative in Australia on a $5 bill. They've done one in the States on a coin. I think it's really time to provide this opportunity. It's a teaching moment, I think, as well. You know, you take out that $20 bill and you have no choice but to stop and think about the original inhabitants of this land. So we would really love to have the support of Canadians out there signing up on our petition, and we're going to be on our way to go see the governor of the Bank of Canada to make this request.
Okay, love that. I don't know how many of us use cash on a regular basis anymore, but I certainly remember back in the day having moments where my dad would pull out one of the bills, so say the $20 bill, and talk about the image that was on there, talk about some of the detail on there, flip it over. It is a teaching moment in your hand, an opportunity for conversation for sure. What has the feedback been so far about this project and this initiative?
Oh, it's been tremendous. So we have also, you can buy a poster. They're $20. The artwork is of world-class quality. I believe the $20 bills will become definitely a collectible. So if there's people out there, if it ever does get printed, it will be a collectible. It is beautiful. It's a piece of art on that $20 bill. And the support, you know, what it really means to us, you know, to Indigenous people. This is a way for a lot of people ask us, you know, what does reconciliation mean? What can I do? Well, this is something you can do. You can support us with this initiative.
I love it. I'm looking at the website right now. The designs are so glorious and different. I would like to have all 12 of these. So order me up $240 right here, because they're all beautiful and so different, and the beautiful faces of Indigenous women who have contributed in this country, and it would be lovely to remember them in this way. Best of luck with it, Lynn. Thank you so much for coming
on.
Thank you
for calling. Bye-bye.
Lynn Grew is the CEO of the Native Women's Association. Reconciliation Through Art, this campaign aiming to get an Indigenous woman on Canada's $20 bill. 10 o'clock here on News Talk 580 CFRA. When we come back, we were talking about Brady Tkachuk's initiative off ice. We're going to talk about the Senators on ice. They are back at home. They play the Stanley Cup champs tonight. They play the Leafs on Saturday. They are in.
This is Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
10:10 on News Talk 580 CFRA. The Cure is heading out on tour. They'll be in Montreal, Toronto in June. They tried to keep their prices low. They wanted to make it accessible. They had prices as low as $20 for their tickets, but then they put them up on Ticketmaster. The fees that Ticketmaster adds on there more than doubled the price of tickets. The band is upset. I'm asking you this morning, do you still go to concerts now that everything's back and live and it's an option? Can you afford it? Who would you pay big money to see? That is our question today. Sean from Chesterville says, as much as I love live music, it's too expensive to see shows anymore. I don't understand how Ticketmaster has been able to avoid antitrust protections. They are a monopoly whose sole purpose is to rip off the public. Anne says, good morning, Patricia. Thanks to promoters like Mark Monahan and Blues Fest, we can enjoy top concert artists without being gouged at the till. That is good enough for me. Someone else texting in saying, Bruce, all the way, $400 tickets, Montreal and Ottawa. Very painful. Thomas Rhett tickets in February were well-priced. Floor seats, about $120 each. Same tickets for Morgan Wallen, $700 to $800. Ouch. Appreciate your text this morning on this. Can you afford it? Who would you pay big money to see? Well, your Ottawa Senators were putting up some exciting content at the Canadian Tire Centre just a week or two ago, and then they all went out on the road and this happened.
Oilers off the draw, cleared out to center. Here's McDavid down to the Ottawa line. Empty net, he hits it.
Doesn't take him long.
No.
It's fast.
Yeah, that is Dean Brown, Gord Wilson, TSN 1200. A tough night in Edmonton. There were a few tough nights on this road trip. The Ottawa Senators are back. They flew back yesterday, right back at it in tough tonight against the defending Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche, but still alive, still in the mix. They've lost a little bit of ground, but they are still in this wild card race. What needs to happen to keep the dream alive? Dean Brown is here. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning, Trish.
What happened? We gave you one job, sent you off on the road with these guys, and you let it all fall apart.
Yeah, if only I had a say. Yeah, no, you're right. Well, you know what? I think in some cases, they at times reverted back to the Senators we saw in November when they struggled badly. And, you know, a lot of the undoing was undoing they committed on themselves. You know, a lot of the wounds were self-inflicted, which it's unfortunate this time of year. That's when a couple of those things are happening in important games. But that's professional hockey. It's still a young team, and they're prone to making mistakes, and it's just coming at an awkward time right now.
So is there a sense of which team is the real team, that November club that now, again, is struggling with goaltending issues and was being scored on at will on the road, or the team that we saw prior to leaving with those incredible back-to-back wins against the Red Wings and a big win over the Rangers and Columbus? And it seemed like the opposite was true. The ice was tilted in the other direction, and it was the Senators that were putting up 5 or 6 goals a game.
Yeah, it's weird how things can flip around like that. Before this road trip, the Senators were the second-best team in the NHL since January 1st. So kind of a new year came around, and they started having more success and ended up, as I said, before this road trip, they were the second-best team in the NHL, but then had their struggles on the road. And there's no one thing. You know, there's, like I said, self-inflicted wounds, but you know, while you got two young goaltenders in there, they're young goaltenders, and they are the third and fourth goaltenders in your system. They're your AHL goaltenders, and now you're expecting them to be guys that at the most, you know, difficult and competitive time of the regular season, be the guys that go out and are difference makers and win games for you. Well, on some nights they can pull that off, but you know, the reality is they're both very young and they're both very inexperienced and they're both in the AHL for a reason. So, you know, you can't say this team is where it is because of bad goaltending. That's not true, but it hasn't been consistent goaltending. And that's, you know, a product of, you know, having a very young pair of goaltenders having to carry this team right now.
Yeah, I've talked to people about, you know, back in the day, you look back now and you appreciate maybe more a really steady veteran hand like a Craig Anderson who, you know, would just come up with, you know, the odd save that made the difference sometimes when you really, really needed that. And you don't kind of appreciate how much that has an impact on the success of the team until you're maybe looking at it through a different lens. So Cam Talbot, refresh us on his situation. When will he be back with the team?
Well, when he originally got injured, they said it would be a 3-week injury. So he's probably another week and a half to go at the very least. But, you know, those are always estimates and you never can tell until a guy actually gets back. But another week and a half at least. And, you know, that's kind of the situation they're in with him. And of course, in the case of Forsberg, you know, he's done for the year after injuring both his knees in one play. So that's kind of where they are with the veteran side of their goaltending situation.
So let's look at the damage here. The whole no one said there would be math, but there's a little bit of math in here. So this wild card race remains interesting, maybe almost out of reach, but not quite out of reach. The two teams that have been there for a bit are still in there in the wild card spots, Pittsburgh and the New York Islanders. And then there's this group of teams after them, and Ottawa was kind of at the top of that group for a little bit. Now they're kind of at the bottom of that group. So Florida, Washington, Buffalo, and Ottawa are still in there with 70 points, but they certainly didn't gain any ground. In fact, lost a little on this road trip. You know, you say you put together what those numbers need to be down the stretch to actually make it happen. It's looking like a taller and taller order with Colorado here tonight, the Leafs here on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, they're still in a situation where they really, Trish, can only afford a couple. And I mean, like, four, maybe five of the outside more regular time losses to still be have a realistic chance of competing for the final wild card spot. So it isn't even so much, you know, about the wins. It's the losses that you can't afford to give up. So, you know, they're at the point now after having a tough road trip where you really are in the situation where, you know, four, maybe five more regulation time losses, and that is going to put them out of reach. So It's still possible, but the odds are getting long for them.
Colorado here tonight. Thoughts on that team?
Well, they're really good. They've got a lot of injuries right now. I've got seven injuries right now. They won a shootout game last night in Toronto. So I guess the good news for Ottawa is that Colorado is likely to come in here kind of tired because, as mentioned, they've got quite a few injuries right now, and they had to go to extra time last night against a really good Toronto team. So any team can beat any other team any night, and Ottawa's got to play a game that they need to win. That's the way they have to approach this. It's, you know, they're really in the situation now where almost every night is a must-win night for Ottawa, and they don't have an easy run here because they, down the stretch here, they play a lot of really good teams just like Colorado. So this is the first of them. It's important, and they have to get back to the way they were playing before that road trip.
There are not many guaranteed win situations in hockey, but there will be one tonight. There'll be about 100 kids in the crowd tonight from the Boys and Girls Club, the BGC, that announced its partnership yesterday with the Senators captain, Brady Tkachuk. Tkachuk's captains, and these kids will be very excited after meeting him to get a chance to see him and the team play tonight. We've said it all probably about Brady Tkachuk, but his ability to connect with kids and be a huge part of this community, you know, whatever happens with the Sens down the stretch is a win for everyone here in Ottawa.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, he and his fiance are the perfect ambassadors for that particular group. Brady is magnetic around kids. They just gravitate towards him and he to them. And I think part of that is that, you know, Brady is in all the best ways, is still very much a kid himself. You know, when there's kids here at the rink, you know, the guy lying on the carpet playing mini sticks with them is Brady Tkachuk, whether they're his kids or not. Well, they're not his kids, but, you know, there's lots of kids that are around here because several of the players have kids. And a lot of times they don't end up, you know, playing in the locker room with their dad. They end up playing with Brady. So he just has that magnetism with kids. They're drawn to him, and he knows how to communicate with them. He is really good at being natural and real with them, and they perceive that. And I don't think you could have had a better pair to kind of lead this charge than Brady and his fiance. They're both young and energetic, and they see the need, and they see how important it is, and they want to help. And I think everyone realizes that the position that Brady's in, if he wants to get involved in a charity, he can pretty much pick any charity he wants.
Yeah.
So, you know, this connection was not made because of any other reason than this is what they wanted to do. This is how they wanted to connect. And I think they're going to do a great deal of good in this area and a bunch of other areas over the years. But those kids are not going to see Brady and just at, you know, when the cameras are on. Brady's the kind of guy where I know that he'll be going down there and going to different places just to play with kids with no cameras there, no big media attention, just to do it, to go have fun and to do something instructive. So those kids will be seeing more of Brady Tkachuk, I think, than they think they will.
Very cool. Very cool. Love that. It's a little noisy. Are you at the rink right now?
I am at the rink right now. Practice is just starting, and there's a bunch of kids here. I'm not sure where they're from, but there's a bunch of kids here for the morning skate, and they're getting all amped up because the players are right there. They're right there.
So
they're just
cool.
Feet away. It's so cool. That's Stutzla. That's Tkachuk.
Love it.
Yes.
Love it. All right, Dean, I'm going to let you go. Do your job. But I think we should start a new thing here. When we have you on a game day, we give you a word that you try to work into the broadcast on TSN 1200 that night. Are you game for that?
I'm absolutely. You just tell me what the word is. You know, you're going to have to text me the word because by the time I get to the broadcast, I will forget the word that we agreed on. So
okay. You
just let me know the word and it'll be in.
I'm going to go with Frappuccino tonight because I'm feeling that.
Easy peasy.
Frappuccino. All right. You don't have to spell
easy peasy.
You just have to say it. Dean, have a wonderful broadcast. Great game tonight. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Trish.
Dean Brown is the voice of TSN, the Senators on TSN 1200. That broadcast at 7 o'clock tonight. The Sens in action against Colorado at the CTC. 1020 on News Talk 580 CFRA. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl.
And learn through the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bowl.
It's a couple of days late, but we wanted to get Councillor Tim Tierney on the line to congratulate him personally on Nickelback's induction into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame in Edmonton at the Juno Awards earlier this week. Tim, pat yourself on the back.
Well, that, a great lead-in, and you're fulfilling your CanCon rules about how much Canadian music you play. So terrific. Canadian Treasures. It was a great show for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's maybe talk about this while we have you as well. Cleaning the Capitol happening again this spring. It's a chance for people to get involved and be a part of Making Our City Beautiful. Registration open now. Tell me about this.
Yeah, so this is the 30th anniversary of Cleaning the Capitol. Really exciting stuff. It actually makes me very excited because it's the end of that snowy winter pothole season, and we're moving to a new level of cleaning up our communities. It's been happening for 30 years. We've had over 1.4 million volunteers. We've had 30,000 cleanup projects. Over a million kilograms of waste has been picked up. And the good news, too, if you have high school students, they get to earn their hours that they require for high school as well. So I always love this one, Patricia, because my community groups reach out to me. I'll drag out the barbecue. We'll make it a fun adventure over a few hours. And we'll usually collect, you know, 10, 15 bags of garbage. The city, when you register, you get your gloves, you get all the things that are required to be able to help clean up your neighborhood, and you just leave it curbside, register that you've done that. And we're really excited because, you know, let's face it, there's a lot of litter bugs out there. And after the winter's over, it's good to clean it back up again.
I was talking to actor Paul Reiser a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you remember him from Mad About You, Helen Hunt. He's coming to Centerpoint Theater. He's here on March 21st. And he was saying that he hadn't been through before. And I said, well, unfortunately, you're coming to Ottawa when it's at its ugliest, or maybe not quite yet this year because there's still a lot of snow on the ground. But that time when the snow starts to melt, and if you're a dog owner like myself in the backyard, you see the remnants of what did not get picked up in the winter. And when you're anywhere in the capital, you see the garbage that's under there, and it's gray and brown and kind of awful. It's sort of that miserable time until Ottawa comes to life in the spring. But there are a lot of jobs, obviously, that can be done to try to make it a little more beautiful. And these campaigns are great because I know you've had involvement from different groups over the years. Members of the Red Blacks have been out there cleaning up, but it makes people sort of kind of take ownership in the land that's around them.
And they truly really enjoy doing it. Like, let's face it, I hate doing chores around the house all the time. But when it comes to beautification of your community, we get lots of people that come out. They really enjoy doing it, so much so the program has been so successful. We actually, in 2006, started our fall Cleaning the Capitol campaign as well. So, you know, over the summer period where people are litter bugs, we clean that back up so we don't have to deal with quite as much at the start of spring yet again. So, you know, with COVID and everything else too, it was a real tough go for a couple of years because we had to pause some of the program, but we're back full force. I have a lot of my community groups already in play right now. And April 15th to May 31st is the spring Clean the Capitol campaign. Conveniently, Earth Day is on April 22nd. So it gets people out and right in the mood of keeping their neighborhoods nice and pretty.
Can I ask you one more question while I have you on the line here? The other thing that we see this time of year, potholes. We were talking to Brian Dennis yesterday about the crews that are out there already starting to fill the potholes. But people are always texting in saying, why is the city so reluctant to give us a little cash when we run into a pothole and we dent a rim or we suffer some damage? Should the city be on the hook for that when people are out driving? Are we supposed to be driving around those potholes, or because you guys are doing the best you can to get them filled? What's the deal there?
Yeah, it's not exclusive to the city of Ottawa. I deal with many municipalities across the country as my role as a FCM representative, 2,000 member municipalities. It's all pretty much boilerplate across the board. Our crews are working extremely hard. I did hear your interview yesterday. I'll tell you, these men and women are switching back and forth between plowing, filling potholes, and we do have our Python 5000s. Self-contained unit, they're going to be rolling out in the next week and a bit, so stay tuned for that. But they are out full force even right now. I saw a crew out on Innes Road today patching some potholes. So we're trying our best. Let's face it, this is the year from hell. We can all admit to that. But we're going to get through it for sure.
Tim, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Patricia.
Tim Tierney is councillor for Beacon Hill, Sirville. It was quite a winter, that's for sure. Freeze-thaw. Interesting temperatures out there. The driving is interesting as well. And it's going to be ugly for a little bit. It is in the early spring. But payback at the end of all that. 11 o'clock on News Talk 580 CFRA. We are going to give you very quickly here a chance to win Senators tickets to be at the Canadian Tire Centre for the game against Tampa Bay. This comes up on March 23rd. We have a 4-pack of tickets to get you in there to see the Senators fighting for that last wild card spot. 613-521-TALK, 613-521-8255. We'll give these away to caller number 14 today, 613-521-TALK. Good luck. 1025 on News Talk 580 CFRA, cybersecurity. It is a hot topic. Stalkerware, what is that all about? Scientists are finding a number of popular smartphone spyware apps are not only hard to detect and remove, but their poor security means they can leak sensitive personal information. This is kind of that scary stuff that we don't really know how it all works or what we need to be doing to protect ourselves or what do we need to be thinking about. Ritesh Kotak knows all about that, though, tech and cybersecurity analyst who joins us this morning. Good morning, Ritesh.
Good morning.
So what is spyware, first of all?
So essentially what it is, it's think of it as a app that gets downloaded onto a device and your mobile device in particular. So you got your Apple and your Android. Mainly, it's a lot harder to do it on Apple. And what does it do? It essentially is invisible and takes control of the phone. So the phone calls that you make, the text messages that you send, your location, turning your camera on, your mic on, it could literally get that intrusive. And that's what mobile spyware is. And it's very concerning.
So it's not something we're downloading on our own phone. It's something someone else is activating somehow.
Yeah, there's two ways that it kind of gets it gets on. It's either it gets sideloaded, meaning it gets downloaded through a app store that is not Android or Apple, or it gets nefariously added on through mechanisms that we might not even be aware of. There was a recent situation where literally spyware was being sent through WhatsApp and you didn't even have to click on anything. Again, this is very sophisticated stuff and very expensive as well. But that is usually how it gets downloaded without you even knowing.
Okay, so if this happens and you don't know and your device is compromised, what could the impact be? What can they do?
So the impact, and it's important to understand like why these softwares are created in the first place. There are legitimate reasons for these types of software. If, for example, if a government has a warrant and needs access to a device, again, it's extremely intrusive, so you need judicial authorization. But on the flip side, we've also seen employers use this. We've seen spouses use this. We've seen parents use this on children. Devices as well. So you just got to be you got to be careful. The best way to kind of figure out if you've been impacted, and it's very, very, very difficult, but the best way is to keep your device updated, because usually when there's an update, it kind of kicks some of these devices off, ensuring that you're looking at the privacy dashboards on your device and just monitoring to see if any app has been installed that you're unfamiliar with.
Do employers have the right to do that around devices that are owned by their employees or by their company?
So in Ontario, there's a Bill 88, which talks about electronic monitoring. As long as there's a policy and employees are aware of what's being collected, there are elements of it that would be allowed. Now, clearly, if it goes too far and it becomes intrusive, that's a whole other issue. But can you just install something on an employee device without telling them, turn it into a live mic? No, you can't do that.
Thank goodness. Okay, so how do we proactively defend ourselves from this? What do you need to be watching for all the time when you say just be aware?
So aside from the really sophisticated stuff that's state-sponsored, these are tools that the government has at their disposal. And what we talked about earlier with judicial authorization, what you want to be aware of is ensure that you don't jailbreak your devices. So just make sure you're downloading apps from the App Store, the respected App Store, or the Google Play Store, not other apps online. And the other thing you also want to do is just keep your device updated. A lot of these updates are not new features. They're security patches and updates to prevent these types of apps from collecting data in the first place.
So the latest iOS on your phone or the latest version of an app that you've downloaded, or both?
Both, because what it will do is a lot of these updates sometimes these security researchers will find particular signatures that some of these spywares have, and they will essentially write code to not allow them to function. So you want to keep it updated. That's usually your best line of defense.
Ritesh Kotak, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ritesh is our tech and cybersecurity analyst. 10:30 on News Talk 580 CFRA. When we come back, it's Thursday. That means it's time for our science segment with Dan Riskin. We're going to be talking about getting rich. Does that make you happy? Probably a lot of you are saying, yeah, yeah, it would. 10:30, this is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull. Clap along out there if you're feeling it this morning. This song makes me happy. But we want to answer the age-old question this morning. Is it really money that makes us happy? Or does it make us happier anyway? At what point does money stop being effective in terms of determining how happy you are? Dan Riskin just might have the answer to this. Starts our science segment with Dan, our CTV science and technology specialist. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. I really wish that to prepare for this, I just got paid more and more and more money and then just figured out when I stopped getting happier about it. That's not how I prepared. I just read a paper about it.
As soon as you're grouchy, we stop talking to you. We just
yeah, exactly. Pull the plug. Yeah. It turns out reading scientific papers brings happiness, but I'd like to see how that compares to getting very, very rich. So I'm just waiting to figure out how to do that second part, and then I'll be able to do the comparison myself.
We were talking about the $20 bill earlier this morning because there's a campaign to have the face of an Indigenous woman on the $20 bill. So I happen to have one out right here. I'm going to put it in an envelope. I'm going to seal it. I'm going to send it to you right after the show. Your first kickback. Here
I'm well on my way. I like where this is headed.
Are you feeling a little happier this morning already?
Yeah, you know what? I'm smiling. So that's worth something. And so, yeah, this is a big question. And there's a paper that came out in 2010 by this famous economist, Daniel Kahneman, who's at Princeton. And what he showed was counterintuitive, but everybody sort of said, once they thought about it, they thought, yeah, okay, I buy that. And what he showed is that, yeah, if you get richer, if you get a bigger income, you are happier. And he figured this out by polling a whole bunch of people and looking at how much money they make and then having them answer a bunch of questions about happiness. And it turns out that people who make more money are happier, but he showed that there's a limit to that, that once you get up to about $75,000, and of course, this is in 2010, so we're about 15 years ago, but 75,000 US kind of levels off. If you make 75K, you're pretty happy. And if you make 85K or 150K, you're fine, but you're not that much happier. You're not significantly happier than you got to by getting to 75K. So it makes a big difference to get up to 75K, but after that, it seems to sort of level off.
That study made a lot of sense to me. Like
sense to me too.
Yeah, a certain comfort level, but then money becomes stressful. Maybe not over 75,000, but at a certain point, you think money's more stressed than it works. But there's another study saying something different.
Right. So, and again, 75,000, we're thinking in 2023 dollars. A lot has happened since 2010.
2 million.
It feels like a lot has happened in the last 3 years in terms of inflation and all that stuff. But anyway, so those were the numbers. But the shape of the graph is what matters. That 75 number isn't as important as the shape of the graph, that it goes up and then levels off. Now, in 2021, just a couple years ago, someone from the Wharton School at Penn, which is another fancy dancy business school, published a paper basically showing the exact same trend, but with no limit. So in that paper, it turned out that the more money, the more happy. That just kept going up. And so these two very prominent researchers had sort of two different ways of seeing the world. And so they decided to settle the argument by doing what they called an adversarial collaboration. They got together, they disagreed, but they decided they were going to analyze some data together and see if they could agree on what it all said. So they actually took each other's data and they reanalyzed everything. And what they came up with is that there's sort of this subtle difference that exists within, you can't treat everybody as the same. If you look at the population as a whole, then you will see the no limit picture that more recent paper shows. But if you zoom in with either data set on the unhappiest 10% of the population, the people that are most grumpy to start with, that's where you get this very definite plateau. And that's where the plateau artifact came from in that first paper. And so basically, what this means is if you're really a sad person, if you're really just not happy, getting richer is not going to help you. But for the rest of us, more money actually does translate to more happiness. And so there's really no reason to hold back on trying to achieve more and get a raise, even though you're already doing okay.
Well, now I just feel miserable.
I know. The whole thing, it's like, oh, so now I have to be even richer to be happy. But it's a very
don't forget
subtle
all that kids and friends and all that thing.
That's exactly the point. Now, your sarcasm is well placed, because what really makes you happy isn't money, right? I mean, it has an effect, but it's not a very strong effect. If you really want that effect to be strong, you do things like spending the money on experiences or you invest in relationships. And there are different ways you can actually use your money to optimize happiness. One of the best ways to use your money for happiness is to spend it on other people. It's been shown that dollar for dollar, you know, a spa day for yourself doesn't make you as happy as giving somebody else the money to have a spa day for them. Mm. It's a great way to show your love for somebody. It's a great way to help somebody you don't know. I mean, giving to a charity, it brings you tremendous happiness dollar for dollar that goes beyond spending the money on yourself. So spending the money on other people, spending the money on experiences instead of spending the money on things, because when you get a thing, you're happy in the moment, but then that happiness goes away pretty quickly and just becomes another thing in the garage that you own, whether it's a truck or a set of skis or whatever. And there are all these different ideas about how to optimize happiness with money. And I just really think that experience one is the one that I most hang my hat on. And I most think about that when it comes to how we're spending our money in our house.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard once 3 days is how long the that retail high lasts after you get some new purchase that you're excited about, and then it fades.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's scientific, but I heard.
No, that sounds about right. But there is a way to, there's a trick you can do to make that last longer, which is to pay for it and then not get it for a long time.
Okay.
So the anticipation, that's for free, right? So like if you buy something, but you don't get it for 2 months, you have 2 months of looking forward to it. And so that's another place where spending money on experiences can be really great. You put down the money on those plane tickets to Cabo, and then you're just super psyched for 3 months that you're going to be going to Cabo, and you get all that time to anticipate and be excited. And then you go on the trip and you have the experience. A lot of people think it's better to do the trip and then pay for it later, you know, off their credit card and things like that. And you know, financial situations aside, I mean, for some people, that's just financial reality. But if you're optimizing happiness, it's better to save up first, look forward to it, put the money down, wait, and then go, and then not be paying for it afterwards, because then you'll have all that happiness on the front end and you won't have that negative stuff on the backside.
Yeah, just positive memories after. And I'm a big believer in the anticipation. I had a friend whose husband surprised her the morning of with a trip to Mexico. And I thought, that's, you just missed out on the best part.
Yeah, you threw it away.
Counting down.
I know.
To that,
you know what?
And getting the
As a kid, my dad did that. We went to Disneyland in grade 5, I think it was. And I remember we found out on the day, and my whole life I thought, oh, you know what? That was really great. That really was a wonderful thing. And then when I read this paper much later, you always go back and criticize your parents for their parenting way back in the day. But if he were optimizing my happiness, he would have told me about it 6 months before. And so for my kids, I make a real point of saying, hey, just so you know, we're looking at summer camps and we're thinking we're going to send you to this camp. So start looking forward to that now, because, you know, that gives me a couple months of happiness for the kids that they wouldn't get otherwise.
I'd love to see that conversation though. Dad, I want to take this up with you. That time when you surprised me with a trip to Disney, how could you?
Yeah, you didn't do it right. Yeah, what kind of a spoiled jerk am I? Holy smokes. Right. That really paints a picture for who I am.
Well,
I'm terrible.
I like that you're spoiled. I like that I've made a $20 investment in our professional relationship. I hope
Perfect.
You are feeling happy, but now we're going to turn it around and try to make people feel maybe a little creeped out. Have a listen.
Hi, Georgie. Aren't you going to say hello? Oh, come on, bucko. Don't you want a balloon?
A balloon? That would be Pennywise. That would be one of the clowns that a lot of people are creeped out by. But apparently, fear of clowns, not an unusual thing out there. In fact, quite a few people suffer from this.
Yeah, I mean, Pennywise, it's almost unfair, because Pennywise is designed to be, Stephen King made that character about as scary as you could make a clown, although, I'm not challenging anyone to make something scarier, because I'm plenty scared by just that.
Yeah, that's
but there are a lot
me.
Of people for whom clowns, whether it's Pennywise or Ronald McDonald, clowns are terrifying. And so this big survey, about 1,000 people were asked, do you find clowns charming or scary? And 53.5% say clowns are creepy. And you look at that distribution and you say, how many people are like fully scared of clowns? Like they will go out of their way to avoid them. They have nightmares, whatever it is. Extremely afraid. It's 5%. And that is really high. That's higher than for things like heights or tight spaces or flying on a plane. 5% is a big number. So it's called coulrophobia. And if you're someone who suffers from a fear of clowns, just know you're not alone. It's actually quite common and it's a real thing.
And there's a lot of them in the workplace, unfortunately, which is a shame. 5% seems low for fear of heights. I'm shocked at that. I thought like half of us were scared of heights, but
Yeah, I mean, but like this idea that you can't go up in an elevator because you're so terrified of just the idea of heights. I mean,
actually affects the way you live your life. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. And for people, when it comes to clowns, like I won't go to that birthday party because there's going to be a clown there, or I won't go to that festival because they might have clowns walking around, things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, clowns. Why are people scared of clowns? They asked the people who said the clowns were scary. You know, what's the origin of this? And for some of them, it's, you know, my dad was always really scared of clowns and I just picked it up from him or whatever. But the most common answer is that people don't like the way you can't tell the real facial expression mm-hmm. of the person with all that makeup. Yeah. That's what gets them, is that they might actually be quite grumpy or quite angry or have like a really kind of like aggressive face that's hidden behind that smile makeup. And the fact that I can't see the real face is what causes me distress. And so for a lot of people, that's really what where the problem comes from.
Makes a lot of sense. I wouldn't call it a fear, but I feel very uncomfortable around mascots, for example, at team sporting events, because you don't know if you can talk to them or what's happening or how you should act. It kind of throws you out of your social comfort level. One more real quick here, Dan, before we let you go. If money making you happy is a no-brainer for some people, this one really a no-brainer for me. We've known for a long time that exercise makes us feel better, that I've known people who have suffered from depression who say they feel themselves going off when they get off their exercise routine. But a new study actually saying exercise should be the primary treatment for depression and other common mental health conditions. Your first go-to. This is really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the researchers are saying, like, you know, we've looked at medicine, we've looked at therapy, and we've looked at exercise, and exercise stands apart. They say, and they don't provide evidence for this in the paper itself, so I say this with a little asterisk, but they say that exercise is better than those other two. Exercise is better than therapy. It's better than medication. I'm not trying to say that those other things don't work. And again, that's not shown by the data that they present, but they do present very impressive data for how well exercise works. They looked across 97 different scientific papers spanning more than 128,000 people, pregnant women, people with HIV, people with kidney disease, healthy people, the whole gamut. And all of the time, exercise helps. And it doesn't matter if you're doing aerobic exercise like running, if you're doing resistance exercise like weightlifting, it doesn't matter if you're doing yoga, exercise helps and it helps quickly. It's not a thing where you have to be doing it for 2 years for it to have an effect. It works very well in the short term. So honestly, if you're having one of those days where you just really, you're feeling depressed or what have you, exercise is a tool that's available to you that you might consider because it can help very, very quickly.
All plays into the idea, I think, that we're not meant to be a sedentary population. We should be out hunting or gathering or farming or doing something, and we're sitting so much. You need to get up and move a little bit. And
Just running away from bears. I mean, honestly, just the things that we used to do as a species just to get around, just walking to different places to get our food. You know, sometimes we're the chaser, sometimes we're being chased, but whatever it is, moving your body just really does help with your mental health. It's all connected, and mental health is health.
And we all want to feel happy. I appreciate the time today, Dan. Have a wonderful Thursday. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I look forward to my $20.
There you go. Dan Riskin is our CTV science and technology analyst, 1050 on News Talk 580 CFRA. When we come back, we're going to clean up Ottawa, the 30th annual Cleaning the Capital campaign. We'll talk to Tim Tierney about that. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
11:11 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Our question of the day for you today: are you going to concerts? Can you afford them? Have you spent big money on anyone recently? Colleen says, morning, Patricia. 10 years ago, I paid $450 for VIP tickets for Bon Jovi, front row and swag bag, and nice before show gathering with appetizers worth every penny. I would go again, but I know I won't get all that for $450 today. We'll see them one more time if they come back to Ottawa, but won't pay over $500. Well, maybe a little over, LOL, Colleen. Yeah, if you love them, maybe it's worth it. Would you pay the big money for the concerts? That's our question of the day today. A couple of people mentioned Bruce Springsteen, that he would be worth the big dollars, or they have paid big money for Bruce.
He is.
Yeah.
Did you see the Cure? I got to figure out a way to go.
Graham Richardson is here, by the way. So this is all sparked by the Cure saying, you know, we tried to keep the prices low and these Ticketmaster fees just more than doubled the price of tickets. So someone's asking me to break down the numbers. I'm going to look that up again. But they had tickets that they were putting out there for as low as $20 to make the concert accessible. And then because the fees are way more than $20 on the Ticketmaster site, what are those fees for anyway? What are they going towards? I don't know.
You know. Yeah.
Graham, good morning to you. It's been a light week on the roads as far as traffic volume. Mm-hmm. Of course, March break, it feels like everyone is away but us. We have been anticipating that it will get much heavier on the roads over the next couple of weeks with this deadline looming for most federal public servants to have to return to the office at least 2 days a week by March 31st. But there appears to be maybe a little bit of a softening we're hearing from the Treasury Board president. This morning, Mona Fortier suggesting maybe a little bit more time for some people. Maybe they'll look at it for a year or so. Tell us about that.
Well, her office told the Canadian press that, I mean, look, for context here, and I know some public servants listen to the show. This was, as we all know, this was an ironclad across the board ruling, all government, 2 to 3 days a week. Implemented by March 31st, the unions were not happy, saying, no, we want to talk about this at the table. The minister saying the employer sets the place of work. We have to get back to the offices. And all of that
this
debate
ensues.
This is
all going to be outside of the collective
That's
bargaining.
Right. That's right. And so, yes, it appears there is something of a softening happening because the minister's office tells the Canadian press there is some discussion of studying the impacts for a year. And of course, that is government speak.
They
for
love their
sand in the gears. Let's delay.
Pushback.
Let's delay. Like they're not sort of hard on March 31st for everyone. Now I know through personal anecdotes with people I know that the return to work has accelerated. There are people who are more in the office now. People who started in January. Took the minister's words and departments have started to implement this, but it's certainly not sort of a full-on must do every single department like it was billed. So I don't know whether this has sort of been quietly, you know what, you don't have to rush to do that. And now we're rolling out saying we're going to wait. But anyway, we're going to try to find out.
Or if people were just waiting till the last possible minute, why do you want to start driving in the winter if you're not being forced to until March 31st? Yeah. But the traffic certainly overall much heavier, I found, in January than
yes.
say, in December. Now, the specifics that CP was hearing, staff at call centers at the Canada Revenue Agency, the Departments of Immigration and Employment and Social Development, adjudicators for the Immigration and Refugee Board and the Procurement Department's Pay Center will have a chance to work from home for another year. So we're going to follow up and see if that's all.
And that's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people, but call centers... I mean, that sort of maybe makes sense, right? Can you not pick up the phone anywhere?
Sure. And then many people who are being told they must go back to work would say, I can do what I'm doing because
yeah.
I've been doing it. So here we go again in this circle. I mean, the bottom line is the government has a significant chunk of an expense in real estate, whether it's leases or owned buildings that remain completely underutilized. And this idea, well, let's turn them into housing because we need affordable housing. I'll see you in 10 to 15 years. Like, that's what that's going to take. So clearly, Fortier believed, past tense, that just like the private sector, we've got to start a gradual return fairly hard and let's go. There may be some qualifications here. Well, clearly there are because they're starting to list places that, you know, are not caught by this edict that she issued a few weeks ago.
All right, we will be following up on that for sure today. Graham, there's a few people out there in our listening audience who have some money, who have a few bucks.
Oh, yeah?
Troy in Stittsville says, good morning, just paid $400 each for two front rows to Journey and Toto. Being a guitar player was worth every penny. Journey, of course, was just here in Ottawa.
Yes.
Are you going to kill someone off?
No. All of this discussion about concert tickets and prices, all fair.
Yes.
And people say it's overpriced. Have you looked at the lower bowl costs for most NHL teams? and we don't even discuss it.
I have
it.
Looked.
And we don't even discuss it.
I want to get to every rink right. in the NHL market at some point.
I mean, it depends. Like, okay, Chicago is one price. Florida is another price. But we don't even discuss what it costs in Toronto or Montreal, lower bowl, to see those teams. And it's much lower than what Bruce Springsteen is charging, for instance, for a concert. So I see where the artists are and where Ticketmaster is. Like, you know, gone are the days of $20 seats in all sorts of entertainment.
Not completely, though. Right. I mean, well, there are ways to get into a lot of sporting events in those cheapy seats or family zone seats if you actually look for it.
Fair enough.
CFL
and you
events.
CFL is a different game.
Some artists and small venues. There are still options, but a lot of people, I think, are willing to pay the big bucks for that experience when we talk about the experience and the memories and all of that.
And they're selling out, right? That's the other thing.
Yeah.
So the artists and the capitalists out there would say...
But selling out partly because of resale markets as well.
Well, but the if the demand is there, you know, price is what people are willing to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like Robert Smith at The Cure said, we could all just boycott Ticketmaster or say no fees. Every artist did that. There'd be no fees. Okay, well, the problem
could
is that there
confusion.
Are there are people willing to pay these prices. And I know a lot of people don't like it. It's just, you know.
I've got a bunch more coming in, people spending big, big bucks. But I'll end with this one because this is really cute. Patricia, spending big money to see Lionel Richie in August in Montreal. I'll say hello.
Hello.
That's Randy. 1118 on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Richie.
What would you spend money on? How high would you go? Let us know. 580, 580. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
Welcome back to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
11:24 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Just paying attention now to what's happening right outside the window here at 87 George in the market. The snow has begun swirling pretty good out there. We're expecting periods of light snow right through until about 3 o'clock this afternoon, then a chance of flurries through the evening. After that, well, we want to look back at what happened as the pandemic was announced and the word of the day, month, year back in 2020 became pivot. And a lot of companies had to do that in order to survive. Some did it in response to calls for an urgent need for specific types of items during the pandemic. That includes personal protective equipment. Right? Everyone had to mask up. Health professionals needed additional equipment to be safe in hospitals. And a lot of Canadian businesses that answered federal and provincial calls during the pandemic to build up our supply here domestically of personal protective equipment are now in a very difficult place. As you can imagine, Barry Hunt is the president of the Canadian Association of PPE Manufacturers. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Patricia. How are you this morning?
I am doing very well, thank you. How is Canada's PPE industry doing right now? This has got to be a tough sort of transitional time.
They're not doing well. They're on life support. They're running on fumes right now.
These are a lot of companies that changed what they were doing that kind of, pivoted to take on filling a need that was really, really acute at the time.
Yes. And you know, there are different stages to the whole pandemic and to the pandemic response. You know, of course, there was an initial panic buy because we didn't have domestic production at all. So Canada was forced to compete on the world market to, you know, buy whatever they could, wherever they could, all around the world. You probably remember planes coming back from China empty, some of them, as we were competing with, you know, against other countries to try and get PPE. And then there was a kind of a second stage that was, you know, how can we set up things fairly quickly? And then there was a third stage, what can we do for the long term? And the long term is really suffering right now. You know, there was a promise from government to ensure procurement flexibility to support innovation and to build that domestic manufacturing capacity for the future. And that has not happened.
Okay, so there was an expectation that there would be long-term contracts here to keep us supplied and prepared, and the government has gone back on that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So There was not only a request to develop PPE in a PPE market, but to develop better PPE, so more environmentally friendly, so plant-based alternatives to single-use plastics, for example. You know, new lifestyle respirators that were reusable and more friendly for people to wear. And so the government had specific contests for that. You know, the big panic happened really in March of 2020. But by the summer of 2020, the government started issuing these challenges to industry to develop these new products. And again, with a commitment to buy for the long term to support that industry. Well, those products have been developed. Canada is now the only country in the world that can make plant-based mask materials and that makes plant-based medical masks. And the government's not buying them.
Why?
You can't buy a plastic straw anymore, and you can't buy plastic knives and forks anymore, but they won't buy plant-based medical masks. And
because they're more expensive, because they're not concerned anymore, because the pandemic threat is over?
Yeah, they're not concerned anymore, perhaps. You know, so we have a thing called the National Emergency Strategic Stockpile, where we are supposed to backstop provinces and healthcare, et cetera, in times of emergency. Well, that strategic stockpile can be used for a number of things. So, for example, it should be stocking product right now for what happens if we get H5N1, human-to-human transmission. How are we going to supply respirators and medical masks to the entire population? Well, there is no plan for that right now. That strategic stockpile is really only to backstop what's needed for provinces and healthcare the way we traditionally use it, not for an emergency pandemic in the future. And we could and should be stocking that stockpile now with these new products that they've asked to be developed.
It seems generally, and it doesn't seem to matter too much which government is in place, that we're not very good at that in this country, about being proactive, preemptive, and prepared. But tell me quickly, we only have a minute left. How many businesses are affected by this? What kind of money are you talking about? What do they do now?
You probably had over 100 different companies that went into it initially. We had over 30 companies that were committed to the long term. So they had to commit to a 5-year being in this business to be long to the Canadian Association of PPE Manufacturers. There are about 14 of those companies left, and there will be hardly any left at the end of this year.
They just can't survive this.
They can't survive. And the problem wasn't so much that government just gave contracts to foreign companies like 3M, for example, or continue to buy from offshore for medical masks. The problem is that they also led provinces and healthcare down that path as well. So the entire market essentially went to legacy suppliers, you know, offshore cheap products for medical masks, and to foreign companies for respirators.
Barry Hunt, thank you for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Barry Hunt is the president of the Canadian Association of PPE Manufacturers. A rise and fall of this massive industry during the pandemic as they responded to this call and now are kind of left hanging. 11:30 on News Talk 580 CFRA. We're going to update you on some breaking news out of Edmonton this morning. Very sad. Two police officers killed. We'll bring you the very latest on that. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.